Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. And today's broadcast is, well, it's a portion of the 12-hour broadcast of Field Day Live 2015. That's right. Amateur Radio Field Day, our broadcast Field Day Live for the year of 2015. And our co-host is Tom Medlin, W5KUB. And also a guest with us was Dr. Michael Barrett, N4ECW. Now, with this said, let me just say, we were broadcasting not just on WTWW on 9930. We were also broadcasting on W5KUB.com in video. And a lot of the Field Day sites had pictures that we put up on the screen, and we were able to zoom into their locations via Google Earth. This was a real unusual Field Day Live this year, and we hope to continue this tradition. I have to say it's the biggest one we've ever had. We've had just wall-to-wall phone calls, and the phones have continued to ring well after the broadcast is over, and the response has been fantastic. We really appreciate each and every one of you that called in and corresponded with us and did a Field Day report from your location. And I'm sure people all over the world have listened to this broadcast and thought, wow, this is really cool. Anyhow, let's just don't talk about it. Let's listen to it. Field Day Live 2015. Dr. Michael Barrett with us, N4ECW. And we're just dying to hear how your operation's going there.
We operate Field Day out of the Emergency Operations Center here at the Mansfield Airport in Mansfield, Massachusetts. And pardon the wind, I'm walking to open the gate for my wife because it's a gated airport. We operate from here at the Mansfield Airport. Our primary goal is fun and food and make a few contacts while we're at it.
See, now that's a Field Day. It's fun, yep, and food. You know, that's
absolutely.
Yeah, I think folks are looking at dinner. Folks will look at me on the television screen and say, yeah, we can tell, Ted, that it's all fun and food for you. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Michael's not too far behind me, though. He'll say, but go ahead, sir.
We got steak tips cooking for dinner, and we're looking forward to having a real good time tonight. We've already got about 45 contacts in the log. We've got two stations going. One is currently running voice on a tri-bander at about 35 feet, and the other one's running CW on a 40 meter dipole. And we're getting ready to start dinner in about an hour.
Hey Lou, I got a question. Is this a rule this year? I understand if your a Field Day group calls into the media or talks with the media, you guys get an extra 100 points. Do you know about that rule?
I'm guessing that this is going to qualify us for another bonus. That is correct.
I think it will.
I think it does.
Well, let's hope so, because we're definitely media.
I got to remember to set the logs.
Well, we've got WTWW. The coverage on this radio station is horrendous. You have no idea where people are listening to you.
I think there are Martians listening right now.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Mars operators are everywhere.
Well, do you know there is an award that's slated for the first guy that contacts Mars, and it's held in a case or whatever at League headquarters, and the first ham to contact was originated by Hiram Percy Maxim. Okay, so yep. David's showing pictures on the screen here, but I don't know what this is. So, David, maybe you can.
That's Lou, I guess. That's a picture Lou sent in.
Okay, that's all right. That's Lou, and I see you.
I don't think there's a picture of me, but I sent in about seven pictures from the site, various people operating and the two stations. A couple shots of the trailer that we're operating out of, and a shot of the grill, because we're going to be using it for dinner.
Now, Lou, the picture I'm looking at, is that a big air conditioner duct aimed right at the back of his neck?
Yes, it is.
Oh, boy, look at this, Ted. Air conditioners right on the neck. You see that right there? These guys know how to.
We're actually only running it as a fan right now. It's actually not warm enough for us to need the AC yet. So, but that's good.
All right. Well, it's a great picture there. Looks like that's the CW station. And then, oh, there's a barbecue pit outside. Looks like you're getting ready for the steak tips maybe in a little while.
Yeah, about an hour.
Well, that's the most important part of field day, of course.
Absolutely, because field day, there's no calories.
That's right. Everything's calorie-free.
No calories, no cholesterol. You know, we don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
And it's from the RF. All the RF just annihilates
it. Oh, absolutely. Gets rid of all the bad stuff.
It's kind of like microwaving the food.
Right. Get you a piece of coconut cream pie and just take it outside and hold it up under that dipole for a few seconds, and there you go.
That's it. All right, let me run, gentlemen, because I got to get back to the microphone.
I want to ask one question on this. How many folks are in attendance with you there?
Right now, we got about 8 people. We'll have 1 or 2 throughout the night, and we'll probably average between 5 and 6 people here throughout the time.
Well, that sounds really good. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate your sharing with us here.
You're absolutely welcome. Thanks for your time, and enjoy making the show, and I enjoyed participating. Have yourself a wonderful afternoon at 7-3, and good luck in the contest.
All right. Thank you. This is radio station WTWW, and I believe we have John on the line with us here in Rochester, New York. How are you doing? Hello? I guess we didn't. Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
All right. This is John, correct?
That is correct.
All right. I had announced you. I pushed the button, but nothing happened. So anyways, I pushed it again. There you are. So tell us a little bit about what's going on in Rochester, New York, and about your field day operation.
Well, right now I'm not at a field day operation. I was just listening. I'm a tech, newly licensed in January of 2015. I know there's a park here in Rochester, Webster Park, where they have set up field day operations, and I've heard a few stations check in and run tests, and it's nice to know that these events happen. And as a newly licensed amateur radio licensee, I like to promote the hobby. I think it's each and every one of our responsibility to promote the hobby, and you know, we need to get more people interested in amateur radio.
Well, I want to thank you for calling in. You're a new amateur. Tell us a little bit about how you got into ham radio. What caused all this?
Well, it actually started around September, October. I actually went out and bought a couple Bofang radios, was listening to the local repeaters chanting it up. And then I thought, you know, it'd be nice if I was able to get on air. And then I took the test in December, and unfortunately I failed it. And then I thought, you know what, I'm going to take the test again. And I took it on my birthday in January, and lo and behold, I passed it. And after that, it was there was no grass growing under my feet. After a short while, I was listening to Nets, and then I became Net Control, and now I'm Net Control Manager for the World Friendship Net on the IRLP 9250. So it's a great experience. I love it. It's a great community to be in, and very helpful people, and I couldn't ask for a better hobby to be in.
Well, let me ask you this question. How did you first hear of ham radio? What was it that that said, here's this hobby called ham radio? Where was the first time you heard the terminology?
My first experience with ham radio was actually in high school here in Rochester, New York, my QTH. And in my early teen years, there was an amateur club out of our local high school, who's Edison Tech, and I went to that school, and I was very interested in. But at that particular age, instead of following a very good career, and I would have been in it quite a while now, I was following other things than amateur radio. So I got out of it, and I'm a single parent, and I'm home a lot, and I have a business out of my home, and I thought, what a nice hobby to have. So in just a very short time, I have a 2-meter jay pole up on my house here, and then I have another UHF EHF antenna. So there's you're only limited by your own imagination in this hobby.
That's true. I mean, it really is. I mean, the imagination can basically take you anywhere that you want to go. It's just it's amazing. There's so many different areas of it, so many different facets of it, that it kind of blows the mind, I guess. So, I want to thank you for calling in. You're a new ham and participating in Field Day by calling in, absolutely. And we wish you the best and hope you have a good rest of the Field Day weekend, and look forward to talking to you again, maybe hopefully over the air.
All right, well, Roger that, and 73 to you, and you guys have a great day as well. And, I certainly do appreciate you taking my call in. So have a good day, gentlemen.
There you go. Thanks a bunch, 73. And this is WTWW, and I've got, I believe, Paul on the phone. Hello, Paul.
Hi, how's it going? We're it turned out to be a little colder here in L.A. than we anticipated, so I'm about ready to go grab a jacket. But, we're operating 2 Alpha here in the city of Torrance, California.
Goodness. I always somehow picture California as being, you know, like seasonably warm all the time. You know, I guess that's from listening to too many Beach Boys records, you know.
Exactly. It was very nice yesterday. It was warm yesterday, but it looks like we're having like a monsoonal flow. So I think some stuff's coming up from the Gulf. The Gulf of California.
I was going to ask you a question. It just slipped my mind. Okay. How many, I guess what I normally ask folks, I ask them how many's in their group. That kind of gives us a little bit of an idea. But how many folks are participating there with you?
14, I count right off the top. 14, 15, 16, I think, are here right now. It's our lunchtime, so some of the guys are, off the radios eating lunch. But we've got about 16 to 20 people here.
I was going to say, I would think lunchtime they'd all show up.
Yeah.
We got Tom with us here. W5KUB, we've got N4ECW with us, Dr. Michael Barrett. I don't know, he's sitting back in the corner texting on his phone. I don't know who he's talking to.
Posted you guys on my Facebook.
Maybe he's trying to get into the show here, You can't text the number. The number on the screen, 616-813-0173.
Yeah, you got it by memory,
Ted taught me an easy way to remember that, but maybe the doctor's texting in wanting to get on the show here.
I said 615 is obviously the area code for our area, and I said 813 is one of the favorite tubes of all time for amplifiers and whatnot, and then 01, the number one hobby in the entire world, and 73, the greeting that, well, we all argue over. Is it 73 or is it 73s?
Yeah, and because of that, I memorized your number just instantly, and I had an 813 amplifier. It had 3 813s in it.
Really?
And I got rid of it here last year.
Really? I a friend of mine had one that had a pair of 813s. Where are you operating at physically, though? I mean, I know you're in the Los Angeles area, but where are you in terms of physically on the map if we were to try to find you?
Well, if you tried to find us, we're in the city of Torrance, which is roughly 30 miles south of Los Angeles, at the Torrance Memorial Hospital, which is right next to the Zamperini Airport in Torrance. And you guys all know who, Zamperini was, Lee Zamperini. World War II guy. So they named the airstrip airfield after him. And that's physically where we're located, just south of Los Angeles in the city of Torrance.
All righty. We're looking at you. Well, we're looking at a map. We got Google Maps up here on the screen. And so now we can see where you are. That's
If we zero in close enough, we might be able to see him. Paul, what color hat you have on today?
Today, I think I have my beige veteran's cap on.
I think I see him, Ted, right there. Do you see?
Yeah,
Yeah, there he is.
I just walked out into the open so you guys could see me.
There you go. Well, listen, now what's going to be for dinner? I mean, what are you guys cooking up for field day?
This year, because our cook couldn't make it, we're having pizza. We are having pizza tonight.
So we were just discussing that, saying that if there was a natural disaster and everything was down, would we still be, would field day groups still be able to, or amateur groups operating emergency, would they still be able to order pizza? And I said, we need to make sure that all the pizza places have generators and radios.
So. Or we bring our generator down with us so we make sure they're on.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it, and I definitely appreciate you updating us and telling us about your field day operation. Hope you have
a great
field day, and we'll hopefully meet up again sometime and possibly on the radio.
Sounds good. We're here.
All righty.
73s, guys. Have a good one.
73s. This is WTWW, and it looks like I've got Tom on the phone. Hello, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Well, tell us a little bit about your field day operation. It says you're in Huntington Beach.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, we're in Huntington Beach, right by the ocean. We're down at by the Pacific Coast Highway, about 40 feet off of the Pacific Coast Highway and about 100 yards from the ocean. And we're participating in amateur radio field day today with our portable emergency setup for the Huntington Beach Racy's Fire Department. And we're operating on all the HF bands today and some VHF and UHF bands, as well as satellite and microwave bands. Today, and we've got a number of members down here participating. We have our complete setup is all emergency power. We have an emergency trailer that we use for disasters and other events. And we participate every year at this at the same place on the beach, and we have a lot of visitors come by and inquire as to what we are doing and how to get involved in amateur radio, as well as RACES, Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service. We are all sworn into that service. We volunteer with our own equipment, and we don't get compensated other than just the fellowship and excitement of serving the Huntington Beach Fire Department and the city of Huntington Beach as RACES members.
Well, let me ask you this question. What do you do to, I guess I'm going to say, promote ham radio year-round so that when you do a field day operation, the folks in your community understand and know what you're doing and all that?
Well, we participate in a number of events in Huntington Beach. We have a marathon that we do every year. It's a regular 26-mile, whatever it is, marathon. And we provide communications for that, and we have uniforms that we wear. We're very well seen by the public, and we get a lot of support from the public here in Huntington Beach. And they know that we are ham radio operators and that we're volunteering our time. We also do two shadow drills a year with the fire department, and we mount our equipment on every piece of equipment in the fire department in Huntington Beach, and we mount our equipment there and in the trucks and ambulances, and we actually act as if their communications has gone out completely. So we take over with our communications, which is a number of repeaters on mountains, and they're all under emergency and battery power, so that we can provide emergency communications in case of a failure of their systems. And we always we put a man in the 911 center, and we also put someone in the fire department control center, and we actually take the calls from the public and transmit them to the fire department. Of course, they also receive their own calls, but we are always faster than the actual 911 service. and they appreciate us very much. We also participate in the 4th of July parade in Huntington Beach, which is the largest 4th of July parade on the West Coast, or west of the Mississippi. Draws about 500,000 people. And we provide communications throughout the parade route for them. And we also help the police department in their Baker to Vegas 126-mile law enforcement relay race in the desert from Baker, California, to Las Vegas. And we provide communications for them where there is no communications at all. There is no cell phone service. So we have a series of repeaters set up on mountain peaks, and we provide excellent communication for them during that race. So we're pretty well known in the Huntington Beach area. There's a lot of hams. We are probably the biggest racies organization in Orange County. There are many others in all the other cities, but I believe racies is in Huntington Beach is the largest of the amount of the groups there.
Well, you know, I guess I was going to say all the activities definitely spell out success as far as your local group is concerned, because you keep, obviously you're keeping your image alive and well in front of the entire community, which I think then works in your favor. How many people are in the group total? Like, for example, in your entire club or group, how many members do you have?
Well, right now we have about, I'd say, 40, at least 40 to 45 active members in the group right now. There are more that are not as active as those, but we have at least 40 right now that are active. We had about 25 members show up this morning down there at the beach, and then, of course, they trickle in.
And how
all
many,
weekend long.
How many show up at your regular meetings?
At the meetings, we usually have from anywhere from 25 to 30 members showing up at the meetings. And we meet in the Emergency Operations Center underneath the City Hall in the city of Huntington Beach.
Well, that's healthy. That's incredible. You guys are doing a good thing there. And I guess, with that said, It only behooves other groups to get busy, you know, to get something
yes.
going.
Yes, it's a very rewarding thing to do. We all are urged to pass the NIMS, National Incident Management Systems courses, which NIMS has a series of courses that you can take to prepare you for emergency disasters and to be able to interact with all the other communities and services in the communities in order to provide support during major disasters and any other types of events that are major. So we're all pretty well versed in that. We have a net Monday nights, every Monday night. We meet on the air on amateur radio frequencies and check into the nets, and then if we have a major disaster, most of the people all check in and then are assigned to their areas for support of communications throughout the city.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you calling in and participating in our Field Day Live broadcast, and you know, reporting in and telling us about what's going on at Huntington Beach. I told him earlier, I showed up without a brain today. I don't know what's going on here. But, Tom, thanks a bunch. And pass the word around to everybody in your group that we're saying 73s to everybody there, and appreciate all their work representing ham radio and promoting the hobby.
Okay, very good. And thank you very much for your service on the airwaves, on the shortwave airwaves.
Oh,
thank you.
We're having fun. Thank you. Hello there. This is radio station WTWW. We got Michael on the phone here.
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry you were holding so long, but we get to talking to folks and we just lose track of time. And
well, that's what ham radio guys do.
Yeah. Do that real well. So you're in Ottawa.
Well, I'm between Ottawa and Montreal. I'm from Ottawa, but I live in the country, halfway between Ottawa and Montreal. So I'm at the eastern tip of Eastern Ontario.
Well, tell us about your field day setup today and what you're doing.
Well, the group has got a field day set up. They've got a one alpha, and they're would you believe they were able to secure an inflatable tent? Yeah, an inflatable tent with a gas cylinder, and it just inflates right up. A good thing they did too, because there's a lot of rain on the way, and there's about 5-6 guys there, and they're going to be operating for the entire duration until 2 o'clock tomorrow on Sunday. And there are numerous groups. I was talking to a couple of groups on HF last night who have been preparing and so forth, and we're giving them some feedback on their audio and RF feedback and so forth. And so I've been invited to a few places, but it's a long drive to go. But they keep telling me, yeah, but the food is great. The food is great. We've got lots of radios. It was very tempting.
Well, tell us all about the food.
I haven't sampled the food. It's a long, long drive, so I didn't go. But I will be communicating with as many stations as I can this evening, and perhaps a good part of overnight and tomorrow. I'll give as many amateurs points. I'm operating from home, so I'm a 1E, as they call it. But I know quite a few clubs and quite a few areas groups. I'm the second manager for Ontario East section. And so I've already sent out emails to all of the Ares group and to as many clubs as I could to let them know that if they want extra points, all they have to do is send one formal message by RF from the field day site to someone who receives it, and that person can take it and send it over by email, and I acknowledge each of them, and it'll give them some extra points.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, as Tom pointed out though earlier, that is, you know, you're making a contact with an international shortwave station. You should be qualified for the extra points.
Yeah, I think you get 100 points just for calling in here.
There you go.
You might want to check that out in rules.
Can I redeem that in food? Field day food, that is. This guy, you know, who was it that said there's calorie free or something?
There was one fellow there said that on field day the calories are not there.
I've been to numerous field days in my lifetime, and I'll tell you, the food is always great. The camaraderie is just awesome. The technical challenges are sometimes numerous. Sometimes they're less numerous. And it all depends, and the enthusiasm is always high, and they're all high on energy, and then they're exhausted for a few days afterwards when field day is taken down. So it's a wonderful way for amateurs to test their mettle, if you will, and be able to provide and hopefully demonstrate to emergency management folks and the public amateur radio can, you know, if the towers are blown down or what have you because of some really nasty weather or some other event, they can operate in the field under field conditions and set up. And they just need 12 volt supplies to their radios and a place to put up their antennas and, you know, be under 10 in a weatherproof area, if you will. And they can talk to the world. Do not need the infrastructure of the power grid or the internet in order to do so. And I think it's good for folks to be able to know that because, you know, a lot of people are talking about some areas that are prone to tornadoes or this or that, and there's a lot of talk about stuff that could hit us, EMP pulses, solar flares, who knows what. But in any case, but me, it's the fun. I was listening to some shortwave today. I took a break from that, talking on 40 meters, and I was listening to all the other bands. I didn't hear anything on 10 meters, mind you, but I was, the band is very, very active, very hot. It's not the best conditions, but hopefully tonight will improve.
All right. Well, then you're listening to shortwave. Did you happen by 99:30?
Absolutely. As a fact that just before you picked up the phone at your end, that's what I was listening to. And I got wind of that from listening to, what was that other frequency I was listening to just before that? Yeah, 9470 or 75.
9475. Okay, yep.
Yeah. I was actually flabbergasted a week ago to come across that frequency and hearing the amateur radio news line on there by very professional broadcasters. And I thought, what? What the heck? I'm hearing ham radio news line on a shortwave frequency. In any case, I was quite surprised, very pleased. I listened to the whole thing. And then today I come across something, and it was more like a talk show, I guess. So I thought, and then from there I heard a website, and I went on the website, and I got onto the 9930 because I caught that on a website. And that's where I got noticed that Art Bell is coming back.
Ooh, yes, yes, Art Bell is coming back and going to be on our station on 5085. Weeknights, and we're really looking forward to that. I think that's going to be really a whole lot of fun, especially
well,
on shortwave.
I've already sent emails to a couple of my buddies who are avid listeners as well. The word's going to spread around. I know a number of people, and this is going to be really fun. I listened to Art Bell starting way back in 1994. I never stopped, and then when he handed the baton over to George Norrie, I'm still an avid listener. I've downloaded quite a few of their shows over the many years, so I got quite the archive. But I like to listen to them as an MP3 file. And believe it or not, I can run around in a garage outside or in the house, and I hear everywhere. And that's because I've got one of those mini FM transmitters, and I just broadcast the audio on that. And it doesn't matter where I am, I've got an FM radio tuned to it.
There you go. That's those little transmitters are cool. The first time I've ever seen one used like that, believe it or not, was Ronnie Millsap, a good friend of ours at WB4KCG. And he liked putting his Sirius XM radio, the oldies, on this little tiny FM transmitter. And, of course, he had it in the backyard and everywhere he went, you know, which I thought was really cool. But
you can be mobile around the house, around your property, still tune in to your favorite shows. And you multitasking with some work around the yard or work in a garage or what have you.
Well, that's,
or maybe doing the dishes.
Yeah. You just have to be careful not to put too tall of an antenna on it. You know.
Oh heck no! Oh heck no! As a matter of fact, I don't have any antenna on that thing. It's an internal antenna. It gives me the radius that I need, and I'm happy.
Oh, these little ones they've got that'll put. They have some of them, I think, put out 7-8 watts. You know, and you can put a quarter wave vertical.
I don't have anything like that. But
quarter wave vertical, and then retire from work and go out and sell commercials. You know, that's
well, they're an idea. No, they don't want us competing with commercial stations. That's for sure.
So, anyways, well, listen, I appreciate you joining us and calling in for Field Day, and I hope you have a good rest of the weekend, and everything goes well for you as far as Field Day is concerned.
Who would have thought? Field Day live on shortwave.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Radio with radio.
Well, you know, we've been doing this. We've been doing this for a number of years. We started off.
Oh,
matter
well,
fact,
I just came across you guys last week and then today, and I thought, wow, gee, I've got to call in.
The first Field Day live that we did, if my brain serves me correct, was in Cookeville. At the headquarters for Trans World Antennas, which at that time belonged to Dr. Michael Barrett here, who you can see in the Bob Heil shirt, and we did this whole thing, and I remember, I don't know if it was the second year, one of the years we were doing it, and all of a sudden the phone rang, and it was Captain Jeff Hammer calling in from Iraq, and he had tuned in and heard the broadcast over there. But he was hearing hams and he was hearing call signs, but it was in the wrong place. You know, it wasn't inside the amateur bands. It was outside of the 40-meter band, and he was like, these people are off frequency. They're out of the bands. And the more he listened, he realized it was a special Field Day broadcast, and so then he called in. But that was quite amazing, sitting there and having a call come in from Iraq from a serviceman. You know,
I would have been quite surprised that he could have picked up. I mean, I just put up a week and a half ago a triple inverted V antenna with a single feed line, so for 80, 40, and 20. And I've got a long wire as well, so I'm flipping back and forth to try and get your best signal. And I was getting your signal right now of 9930 at a 3. So I don't know which way your antenna is oriented or what have you. It would have been nice to get a little bit more oomph on your signal.
Well, it's of course, all that's driven by propagation, and there's mean, we're getting 20 and 30 over reports all in different places today. But there's places where we're probably S3, you know, depending on on the on the atmosphere and the I guess I want to say the condition of the atmosphere as well as the location, just about how the signal propagates. So
And I think the sun sent something to planet Earth there. Was it yesterday or the day before?
Oh yeah, we got a nice package. Yeah, we got a nice package. I keep expecting one of these times we're going to have a satellite get zapped or two or three.
That is possible. At least it was only what did they call it, a GM2 or something. So it wasn't in the higher classes, which could have been quite nasty.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't follow that. I just knew it happened. And what's interesting is most people don't have any idea what it is, and they've got no idea it's happening. So, something to be aware of, I guess. But
I would think so. Are you guys cousins with WBCQ by any chance?
Not really. No. Alan Weiner is a good friend of mine, but that's a separate, complete operation. They're located up in Monticello, Maine. And,
No, I listen to them quite regularly. It's just that you're a second radio station talking about ham radio like these guys do, and having a great old time with their station, and they're selling time slots to some really good shows, and so you've got some similarity, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Oh yeah, well, shortwave stations really share quite a little bit in common. For the long time, shortwave stations have been kind of like the black sheep of the family. You know, we're the odd man out. You know, but what people don't realize is that the shortwave audience is absolutely huge. I mean, it's huge. And we do music shows on Saturday and Sunday nights. The first hour I'm on, I can get 600 emails in. I mean, you sit there looking at Outlook, and it's going plip, 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 plip. You know, you can't even retrieve the email because it jams up so bad. You know, so, and I know a Chicago FM station can't do that. I don't care if they're giving away a dozen cars. They're not going to get that kind of reaction. And I think the shortwave listener is a positive, sort of attentive person, where AM and FM listeners, I think they're about half conscious most of the time. So that's what I think. That's what I believe.
Well, shortwave listeners, I think, are rather well informed on a lot of subjects, a lot of issues. That they're in it. They're in it for the knowledge as well, not just for listening to international stations.
No, and that's true. But back on WBCQ, Alan Weiner, a lot of folks don't know, may not know this, but Alan was the one that originally put, I guess I want to say, probably the only pirate station off the shores of the United States, and he was actually in internationally cool waters. In other words, he was off the coast, he was out of the territory. They had a ship that was licensed or registered to some country. I don't know what it was, but he was legal. They were legal. But the U.S. government came in and whisked them off the ship and put them in handcuffs, and they went through all kinds of stuff, you know. And you know what they were doing? They were on the air playing rock and roll.
Yeah, they weren't even selling airtime, and I guess the government was pissed off because they weren't getting a piece of the action. There was no action.
Well, I can understand if they were on there broadcasting anti-American activities and they were, posing some sort of threat, or they were, advocating some sort of a terrorism thing or something. I can understand the government getting upset over that. Absolutely. But a bunch of young guys off the coast playing the Beatles and playing, I'm your Venus by, goodness, now I've lost the name of the group, Who did
that? I grew up with all that stuff.
Yeah, they were playing playing all this rock and roll, and I think it's these people that are afraid. They're afraid somebody's going to get the edge on them or somehow, and those guys out there on that boat, they're just having fun. That was all they were doing.
They have a party on a boat.
Yeah, that was it,
Big radio on air party on a boat. Those guys were absolutely dedicated.
If you go up to our website, which is qsoradioshow.com, go there.
Yeah, that's how I got all this info.
Okay, and scroll down. There's a show there of me and Alan Weiner, and we talk about everything under the sun. Probably a lot of things we weren't supposed to talk about.
The chat room said Shocking Blue.
Shocking Blue, there you go. Venus by Shocking Blue.
Where do I find this? Because I'm on the website there now.
Yeah, just go to the podcast. Podcast, yeah. There's Alan and I did a radio show on that. And incidentally, they're going to be doing Art Bell as well as us. They've got Art Bell coming on too. I saw that printed somewhere, but I'm not sure what it is. So Art's going to be taking over the shortwave radio spectrum. That'll be cool.
I'll tell you. Oh yeah, it's going to be so nice to hear this guy back on. I hear he's back in Pahrump.
Yeah, he's back in Pahrump, and he's going to be back on saying, "Turn your radio down, caller. Turn the radio down." You know.
Absolutely. I archived a lot of his shows. He was the first guy I know of that was testing streaming audio.
I was getting a big bang out of when that Hale Bob comet was out there, and the people would mispronounce it. They would say Hale Bob. They said the Hale Bob comet. He would say, "It's Hale Bop."
You get
all upset over that. I was rolling in the floor.
I love the style, LB. I still listen to some of the old archives that Coast to Coast has on.
I don't know. I haven't. I have a. You know. I don't know. It doesn't hold my attention like it used to. So I'm very very. I'm very excited about Art coming on, and I understand all the regulars will be there. I'm good friend. We're good friends with Linda Moulton Howe, and I understand Linda's going to be on and everybody. So it's going to be cool all the way around.
Oh, and he's going to bring back some of the old guests he's had.
I'm sure that's going to be the, you know, that's going to be the thing.
Sure too.
Most interesting stuff on radio. Well, listen,
hopefully
I want to say
some podcast. Hopefully, you'll have some podcasts as well that people can go to.
He's going to have a subscription service. But I've got a caller waiting, and I need to run. But I thank you so much for joining us and calling us on Fielding.
One quick question. What is your power output on 9930?
100,000 watts.
That's a little bit more oomph than I got.
Yeah.
and Ted, right, don't forget to tell him. You got this 18 dB gain rhombic hooked to the transmitter.
Yeah,
where do I get one of those?
We got ours at Walmart.
Oh, yes, of course.
I don't know.
Anyway, you guys sound like you're having a great old time there. Great sense of humor. Doing a good public service. 7-3 and carry on.
All righty, 73 to you,
from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, 73.
Thank you for calling. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Field Day Live 2015 on QSO. And we're going to be right back right after this. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if say you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com.
How about a shortwave radio you can hold in the palm of your hand? How about a shortwave radio that's no bigger than a pack of cigarettes? And yet, so sensitive and so selective, it will blow your mind. I'm talking about the SkyWave. The SkyWave radio from Sea Crane. You need to go to the Sea Crane website, seacrane.com, and check out the SkyWave. I've not seen anything like this radio. I've looked at every kind of shortwave radio there is. This thing is a mind blow. It really is. It's based around some sort of a DSP chip, I guess I want to say. And, buddy, when it locks into a signal, it locks in. I'm listening to WTWW on this thing, and I'm just having my mind blown. Go check this thing out. If you don't have one, you need one. If you're a shortwave radio listener and a shortwave fan, you have to have a SkyWave, especially with Art Bell coming back to radio via shortwave on WTWW. Now, if you'll call the Sea Crane Company and order a SkyWave mentioning WTWW, you get a special bonus. Now, you be sure and do that. Check out this little radio, the SkyWave from the Sea Crane
Company. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website. Simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO and Field Day Live 2015. So let's get back to our rebroadcast of Field Day Live 2015 on QSO. This is radio station WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, United States of America, and we have Les on the phone, I believe. Hello there.
Hi there.
And where are you located?
We're in Sarasota, Florida, on the west coast of Florida, where it's pretty hot.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's always makes for an interesting field day.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Well, tell us about your operation there.
Well, we're at a local church here in Sarasota, and we're actually indoors, but our antennas and everything, of course, being outside. But, you know, earlier today when we were out there putting them up, it was pretty warm, so that's kind of why you made that comment. But we're located in Sarasota, Florida, and we're located here at the Bee Ridge Baptist Church. And we've got about four stations on the air. We had a few more earlier, but the guys couldn't hang around for the whole day, so they had to leave early. But right now we've got four stations we're operating.
Well, that's interesting. So now tell us a little bit about the equipment you've got on the air.
All right, well, we've got an ICOM 706. And we've got a Kenwood TS-450. And I'm not sure what the other fellow's running over there. I think it's an ICOM product, but I can't see from here what he's sitting in front of it, so I can't see what it is. But we've got, I think we've got about four or five antennas set up outside. We've got a couple of the Eagle One verticals, And also, we have a MFJ vertical out there, and I think there's another one. I'm not sure what it is. Can't see it from where I'm sitting, but it's a vertical as well.
Well, it looks like you're having a beautiful day there for the weather. What's the temperature?
It's probably about 95 degrees, clear skies right now, and there was some rain earlier this morning, but that's all past. You know, it's all inland now, so we're doing good. I mean, it's quite warm, but, you know, we're actually inside a building, so it's not too bad in here, but outside it's quite warm.
Yeah, we're looking at pictures that you just sent in, Les, of your operation there. Nice and sunny outside. I see you got the windows open a little bit there. Humidity must not be too high there.
We got our feed lines running through there,
Oh, yeah. So, I know. I know when it's 95 here, our humidity gets so bad it's unbearable. But I think your weather's a little bit different down there.
Well, we get pretty humid too because we're surrounded by water. We're like somewhere on the West Coast, so just south of Tampa, and it gets pretty humid here. That's the typical thing for here in the summertime.
So, how many people do you have on your team there this year?
Well, we had it earlier in the day. We had probably about 10 people here that were, taking turns on the air and whatnot. Some of them have kind of wandered off now, but there's right now there's about six of us here still, you know. And, we've got a few stations on the air. Right now we're just getting ready to have a little meal before we continue on. So people are just kind of relaxing for a few minutes here until the meal's ready. But other than that, it's been a great day. You know, we've had quite a few folks making contacts and whatnot.
So you guys going to run all night, or are you guys going to take a break?
We're probably going to take a break. We're at a church, so we have to be kind of out of here before the morning. So
we'll probably
be here for a few hours. But
it probably wouldn't work out too well with church starting in the morning and you guys still operating there, right?
Right. Well, we're not in the church itself. We're in the building behind the church, but they use this for Sunday school and whatnot, so we have to be out of here. So the church is one of our club members is a member of the church here.
So I guess my question is for the stations that are operating sideband, would you be RFing their PA system?
There's always that possibility, yes. right now, of course, they're not operating it, but, they don't have it on. But, that could be a problem.
You know, Ted, I can remember that when I was little in the church, you know, on Sunday morning, and over the PA system, the preacher's talking, and a CB-er comes in, he must be parked right outside, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that happen, yes.
I remember when I was young, my mother would shop at the Kmart store in Garden City, Michigan. And I'd pull into the parking. We'd pull into the parking lot. Of course, I had a ham ticket then, and I had an ICO tri-bander under the dash. And you could actually mount an ICO tri-bander under the dash of a 1963 Ford Galaxy.
You mean there was some metal in there you could put a screw in?
But I remember putting that thing on AM. I believe it was AM. It had to be AM. I put it on AM, and it did have AM on it, now that I think about it. And I was able to talk into the microphone, and I would come right over the PA system. So I'd get on there, and I'd make announcements, you know, and she'd come out of the store horrified, you know.
It created a whole new business of companies making the TVI filters to kind of block a lot of that out, because they used to mess TVs up a lot, too. So I remember those days.
Well, listen, I thank you so much for calling and sharing with us. And
appreciate it.
Anything else that you want to ask or say, Tom?
No, I would just like to say for all you people that have just tuned in, you can watch and look at Ted today. He's on video. If you go to w5kub.com, we're webcasting this from Ted's studio.
I was going to say the best thing to do is to keep your eyes on Tom and on Dr. Barrett here. And
we almost ran out of cameras this morning, but we have one still working.
Well, very good. Very good.
Well, thank you for calling, and we appreciate it. You have a good field day. 73s.
All right. Well, thank you all as well, and keep up the good work you all are doing up there.
All righty. Let's see what we got here now. We got Jeff, I believe. Hello, Jeff in Atlanta. How are you? Well,
where's Jeff?
Hello, Jeff. The arrow isn't blinking, so that means that he should theoretically be there. Maybe he stepped away waiting, or maybe he hung up. I don't know how this thing behaves on a hang-up.
I don't know, but let me say hello to Bobby Pro. Bobby Pro's in the chat room. He's a shortwave listener for a long time, and he's been following us, Ted, the past couple months, ever since the Dayton Hamvention. And all the things we've been bringing him on our Tuesday night webcast and your show, and he's working to get his ham license now. That's Bobby Pro, and I think he's right outside of St. Louis, Missouri.
I've spoke with him in the chat room just a little bit, off and on, and I was making a suggestion to him about getting his ticket, and what I had suggested was Ham Test Online, because they are just, I think, incredible. I don't know. I mean, everybody else might have their opinion. I didn't ever do well with study books. Well, one of the reasons why. Okay, let's just look at the technician license for a minute while we're waiting for a call to come in. I don't know what that flight. Well, I guess we got one coming in, but I don't understand that. Anyhow, you go to the league, get the book for the technician test, and you open it up, and the first thing that you see is a discussion about coulombs. Okay, now these are not coulombs. These are coulombs, you know. So the term, it's nice to understand it, but it's not on the test. So why is it there? So Ham Test Online concentrates on what's actually on the test, and as you are taking their practice test, or as you're studying, when you miss one, it brings it back to you. It brings it back to you until you finally get it. How many, Dr. Bear, get over here close to the microphone. How many folks that you know in your own family, even, that's used Ham Test Online?
Well, my wife used it and got her ticket. My daughter Megan, she used it and she got her ticket. And as you know, Ted, over the years on QSO, we promoted heavily Ham Test Online, and I've never met anybody didn't like it. I've never met anybody that said it doesn't work or it doesn't work for me. It's almost guaranteed. And I will say this, with the question pool expanded a few years ago on the extra test, it's just about critical to have something like that, because it's pretty tough, and it tests you on the things that you don't know. Once the software figures out what you know, it kindly leaves that alone and it goes for what you don't know, and it drills you and drills you and drills you. And I don't want to speak for the company, you may remember, but I think they have a guarantee or something. If it doesn't work, doesn't they have a money back guarantee or something?
Yeah, it's not expensive to start with. I think the technician thing, a membership in it for 2 years, and surely heavens, you can get a technician in 2 years. You know, most people I know that use it get a technician in a matter of a week or two. You know, and I think it's. It's right around, it's $20-something, $21, $22, good for 2 years. And if for some reason you just can't seem to hack it, yeah, they just send you the $22 back and say, gosh, we just wish things were better for you, you know?
You know, Ted, hams complain about everything. I don't mean to be cynical, but in all my years of knowing about the folks at Ham Test Online and having dealings with them, you know, on your show and in life, I'm not personally aware of anybody that ever wanted their money back. Maybe there was somebody, but I would say it's very, very, very infrequent that somebody's not satisfied.
Yeah, I would say that as well. And I think that most folks that if they did follow the Ham Test Online thing and they didn't get their, well, let's say if they don't get the license, it's probably because they're not following the program, probably too embarrassed to ask for their money back. That makes any sense at all. Okay, let's see who's on the phone with us here. This looks like Dave, and where is Dave at?
Dave is in Morgan Hill, California, just south of San Jose.
Well, very good. And how's field day going?
Well, field day is a lot of fun. We're focusing more on educational fun this year, not only for members of our group, but also for we have a Boy Scout troop that is just completing walking through here.
You want to call and say hello and tell us where you're listening. And if you want to, you know, make a complaint about the video or the ugly people on camera or something like that, we'd like to hear from you. It's 615-813-0173. And we'll give that out again. We got somebody here on the line with us. Let's see who's there. It looks like John. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. And
excellent.
Where are you located?
We're here in Franklin, Tennessee.
All righty. Well, I know the Williamson County Group very well. Tell us what's going on, how your operation is set up, and what you're doing.
Sure. Well, this year we've moved up to a 4F category. We have two single sideband stations, a digital station, CW station, and a GOTA station, as well as we've got a VHF and WinLink set up. So we've been very active with visitors today, so we're excited about that. The bands seem to be a little bit challenging, but we're mustering through it, and we've got some of the county equipment out here, running a lot of G5 RVs and a fan dipole and a couple other odds and ends.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to think. There's a repeater that you folks have, and I'm trying to think. It's at, actually, it's the Buzz Transmitter site. I don't know if you're familiar with this at all, out off of Taliaferro Road.
I'm not specifically familiar with that area, but we've actually got a network of six repeaters, sometimes more, that kind of overlap around the county here in Williamson County. So we've got a pretty nice footprint for a localized group.
Well, the reason I mentioned that is we take care of that transmitter site, so we frequently see the repeater. And it's kind of a funny story. Yeah. We're up there working on a transmitter, and if the volume's up on it, it's, you know, it's pretty quiet. You don't hear much on it, and all of a sudden, this voice will just come out of nowhere, you know. So I've been in that building a number of times, you know, and all of a sudden, here comes a voice, you know. As a matter of fact, one of the fellas that works up there, that I guess you would call him kind of a handyman, he was not even aware that it was there, and he was in the building, and that thing came to life, and there were voices on it, and it just scared the daylights out of him. He thought there were...
Oh, no.
Encountered a ghost, you know.
We like to surprise people from time to time.
Well, you're a very active group. You guys have... you do a whole lot with young people. You do a lot with the scouts. And I know I've tuned in a couple of times, and you guys have been doing, scouting-type ham radio stuff. And it always sounded extremely cool. Well, all right, so in attendance today, how many people do you have on hand?
Oh, I don't have an exact head count for you. As far as WCARES members, we've... probably got about 30 members on site at any given time, and I believe the official guest count was at 89 just a few minutes ago, two of those being elected officials, which we're really happy about. Some years we don't get any elected officials, even though we do invite always, but this year we've been fortunate enough to have a councilwoman and another city elected official. So we've also got a couple members of WCARES who are emergency operations personnel who are out here nursing the equipment, hanging out with us.
Well, that's cool. I was talking earlier, and I basically said sometimes I think what we consider to be maybe lack of cooperation upon the part of city officials to come out and recognize Amateur Radio Field Day is the fact that I guess I want to say the powers that be is how I chose to term it, really don't do enough to familiarize folks with amateur radio, so they really don't know what it is. So, I mean, it's like, you know, you don't really take a Saturday afternoon away from family and friends to go out and do something that you don't understand or have no clue as to what it is. And I think if some of those folks actually saw an amateur radio QSO take place in someone's home, and could see what this hobby's all about, they'd have a totally different attitude. I mean, they'd completely have a different understanding of it. I think that we fall down on the job there sometimes. And
you're exactly right. And you know, field day is just one opportunity for us to get out in front of the public and show off what we can do. WKRS has certainly demonstrated that for a number of people today. But we also would like to use opportunities like bike rides or public service events. We've even been asked to participate in music festivals like Bonnaroo to help provide communication support. And in doing that, we really get exposed to the public quite a bit. And I can't say enough about the county here in Williamson County for the support they give us. And anytime we want to hold a public-facing event, they open their arms with a venue and any kind of emergency equipment that we might want. And as our served agency, we just really appreciate them being so helpful.
Well, Williamson County is an unusual amateur radio group in the fact that they really, they really participate. They do things. You know, they're a doing group. They aren't talking about it. They're doing something. And I know I hear all the time different things that are going on that the group is up to or doing. And it surprises me because I don't get to keep up with all that. But I know with young people, they're like, you know, incredible. I don't see how they could do more.
Well, I appreciate that, and that's something that that we really enjoy doing. The mixture amongst our organization is pretty diverse. About 3 years ago, our roster had about 350 names or so on it, and when we changed our leadership makeup, we sort of culled that list a little bit and brought it down to a more manageable number that actually participate and become active. But amongst that group, you've got your hardcore Aries guys and the really emergency-focused ones. But there's also those of us that just enjoy the hobby that happen to really enjoy sharing the hobby with other people. So that group of people does a specifically good job of interacting with the Boy Scout troops and finding new ways. Last year, we participated in the Maker Fest, which was held, one of their regionals was held at Cumberland Science Museum or Adventure Science Center. So using opportunities like that to spread the gospel about ham radio is what we like to do.
Oh, that really, really sounds good. And listen, I appreciate you calling in and participating and telling us about your field day operation. And I just want to say good luck to you. Is there anything you want to say, Tom, or is anything you want to add to it?
Well, I just want to say thank you for what you do. And I love hearing your show and your podcast and everything that you do for ham radio and shortwave. And anytime we can be of help, please reach out. We'd love to participate.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate those comments, and look forward to, you know, you're just across town, so look forward to meeting up with you guys. You know what you guys need to do with your club sometime is plan your meeting accordingly and have it out to the radio station and take a tour of WTWW and see what 100 kilowatt shortwave radio station looks like. And
that would be fantastic. So I'll get in touch and we'll set up something like that. We don't have to just get together once a month. We have a pretty nice size group that will get together once a week for breakfast or we're always doing something extracurricular, so I'll definitely be in touch to take you up on that offer at some point.
All right, 73s, and you have a good field day.
All right, 73s. Take care. Thank you.
So we go from John to John.
Hi.
And how are you doing, John?
Oh, we're busy. We're doing fine.
And you are in, looks like, Iowa City?
Right, we're at Hickory Hill Park in Iowa City, Iowa.
Well, that sounds interesting. Now, tell us a little bit about your setup there for field day.
Well, we're running a 3-alpha station. We've got 10 and 15 meter beams. The 10 meters isn't picking up too well because of conditions, but we got the 15 meter beam. We've got a dipole for 20 meters. We've got a Bruce antenna on 7 meters and another dipole for 80 meters, which we'll be using later on tonight. We're also working in association with the University of Iowa Radio Club, and they are operating a get-on-the-air station as well as our bonus VHF UHF station.
And how many folks you got there all together at your field day location?
Well, I would say we probably got around 20 or so. Some folks come and go, and it's kind of hard to keep track of them.
Well, we've got Tom with us here, W5KUB. I'm sure you've watched his video casts a number of times. He does the live broadcast from the Dayton Hamvention and the Huntsville Hamfest and anything else that we can coerce him into. And okay. He's here with us. We also got Michael, and for ECW, Dr. Michael Barrett, here with us. So you may want to say hello to those fellas, and they may have some questions here about your operation.
Okay.
Well, let me just say hello to John. This is Tom, W5KUB, and you know, Ted was talking about our webcast. Ted is our co-host with us on Tuesday night, so be sure and help us get the word out. Tune in to W5KUB.com. And you can you can see Ted there. He's starting to get on camera now. We got him a camera, and he starts putting his makeup on a couple hours early. And he's usually on time each Tuesday night, 8 o'clock.
Tom will not allow me to wear my favorite wig, especially with my favorite shade of lipstick. He just won't let me do it. So I don't know.
Well, when we said makeup, that's a little too much. We you know, we have to keep this very professional.
Oh yeah. Anyhow, let me ask this question here, and that is, total in your local club, your local group, how many people are there that are like on your complete roster?
We probably have about 20 to 25.
So, in other words, you've got almost 100% participation for field day this year, based on the number of people that are members of your club.
Well, the people present are not all the members. There are a few people who are wives, children, spouses. Some of the people present are not in our club, but they're members of the University of Iowa club.
Aha. Uh-huh. So with the local club, though, just give me a little rundown on some of the other activities that you have during the year.
Well, we do some activities for, well, first of all, we have an educational program at every meeting. We conduct a swap meet once a year. We have help various public service type events, like for the American Diabetes Association fundraisers. They do a Tour de Cure event where it's just basically a bike ride, and we report on the location of riders to the officials running the event and so on.
Well, you know, I just want to say that when you have a group of about 20, but you still have a turnout of about 20, even though it may be wives and kids, that's quite an accomplishment, though, because usually what happens, you'll have, you know, 500 on the roster and 30 people show up for the meeting. So that's, you know, and you can't really, you know, and it's maybe a different 30 each time. But, I mean, it's encouraging when you see numbers participating that matches, you know, the role of the membership or the roster of the club. So let me ask this question. How long has your club been around? How long have you guys been an amateur radio group or club there in your city?
I'm not sure exactly. I know we I know our origins go back to like the 20s or 30s. The club call sign W0JB was actually once held by a professor at the university, and that's where the club call comes from.
Well, there you go. Well, listen, I really appreciate you phoning us and talking to us about your field day operation, and hope to run into you down the band a ways. Is there anything else you were wanting to talk about?
I'd just like to encourage anybody that's listening that's not at a field day event, look at the field day locator and find one near you.
There you go. That's a cool thing to do, and get out and see what field day is all about. Well,
yes,
thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, John, you have it. You have a good field day, and hope to run into you on the band somewhere.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay, in 73s.
73s.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Field Day Live 2015 on QSO. And we're going to be right back right after this. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com. How about a shortwave radio you can hold in the palm of your hand? How about a shortwave radio that's no bigger than a pack of cigarettes? And yet, so sensitive and so selective, it will blow your mind. I'm talking about the SkyWave. The SkyWave radio from Sea Crane. You need to go to the Sea Crane website, seacrane.com, and check out the SkyWave. I've not seen anything like this radio. I've looked at every kind of shortwave radio there is. This thing is a mind blow. It really is. It's based around some sort of a DSP chip, I guess I want to say. And, buddy, when it locks into a signal, it locks in. I'm listening to WTWW on this thing, and I'm just having my mind blown. Go check this thing out. If you don't have one, you need one. If you're a shortwave radio listener and a shortwave fan, you have to have a SkyWave, especially with Art Bell coming back to radio via shortwave on WTWW. Now, if you'll call the Sea Crane Company and order a SkyWave mentioning WTWW, you get a special bonus. Now you be sure and do that. Check out this little radio, the SkyWave from the Sea Crane Company. Is it possible that a coffee roaster who has been blind from birth could make the best
tasting coffee in the world. Well, I'm here to tell you that not only is it possible, but it's true. If you would like the most delightful, rich cup of coffee you have ever drank in your life, I'd like to invite you to visit the website of The Unseen Bean. That's The Unseen Bean, UNSEENBEAN, TheUnseenBean.com. Jerry Leary, amateur radio operator, shortwave listener, he is the owner of The Unseen Bean, one of the country's few blind coffee roasters. You will love his coffee. We want to invite you once again, go to his website, and that's TheUnseenBean.com. That's TheUnseenBean.com. Let's talk just for a moment about QSL cards. And let me tell you about Mr. QSL, call sign K4JSG. The world's finest QSL cards ever, guaranteed. Now, if you go up on this guy's website, you're going to find this note that says, please note, these are custom designed cards. If you're looking for a plain, ordinary, simple, basic, or any other word that's a synonym for boring, you'll be better off with a different card maker. Now, somebody make a statement like that, that should tell you something. The world's finest QSL cards ever, guaranteed, K4JSG. Go to Google. Go to Google, put in Mr. QSL. That's Mr. QSL. The very first listing will be Mr. QSL or K4JSG.com. Here at the QSL Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO and Field Day Live 2015. So let's get back to our rebroadcast of Field Day Live 2015 on QSO. This is WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, United States of America, and with us on the phone is somebody else named John.
You know, I was just going to say, Ted, either you have a John filter on, or most hams in the United States are named John.
But it looks like K0...
I thought they were all named John.
Is it K0KKV?
Yes, that's our club station call, yes.
Ah, very good. Well, tell us a little bit about your operation and where are you located?
Okay, we're located in Lincoln, Nebraska, capital of Nebraska. And our club is about 300 members strong. And we started planning for field day about a year ago. And have enjoyed the fact that it's finally here and we get to do it. But this year we're working a 3-alpha.
And tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. We've got a goddess station for the public. We do, we're very, very heavy into public service here. Storm watch and public service. And so it's very important to us to present to the public what amateur radio is and what it's all about. So we've got a goddess station set up with a lot of information, a lot of handouts. And we encourage the public to come out through local radio broadcasts during the week before field day to come out and check us out and go to the goddess station and actually see what operation and ham radio is all about.
I'll just look at this picture here. I don't know, Tom, if you noticed it, but are those lights at the top of the pole? Is that some sort of microwave?
I think those are lights. These guys are first class. Look at this.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're very lucky in that we are very active with Stormwatch here. We have a very good relationship with the EOC, the Lancaster County Emergency Operations Center. And because we do have that relationship, they allow us to use their generators. So we've got a 6.5 kW and an 8 kW, as well as the lights that you see, which are 6 kW, a little over 1.5 kW each, and the generator to run all that. So we're lit in the nighttime here, which is really great for safety. We don't have to worry too much about folks tripping on cables they don't see at night. So we're delighted to have that relationship with the EOC and the ability to use some of their equipment.
Now, for folks that are listening on shortwave, I want to remind you, W5KUB.com, and you can see the pictures. And I was just going to say, Tom, is that not a good-looking beam on the tower?
What a tower. And, hey, I saw another. It looked like a two-meter, a long boom 2 meter. It was laying on the ground out there by your lights. But it looked like one of the horizontal, vertical polarized deals.
Right, circularly polarized.
Yeah,
we'll probably get that up a little later as we break men free to make it happen. We've got a tower we erect every year, and we've got a five-element 20-meter beam up there, which really helps us out with our sideband contact.
Yeah, and that tower looked like it was a push-up or a crank-up?
That's a crank-up, but we devised a fixture to raise it after we install the beam on the tower on the ground. Then we raise it up with a system of winch and counterweight up to the vertical position, and then we have the hams holding the guys and nail them down after we get it up. So then we crank it up to final heights after that. So it's quite a neat bet to see it go up.
All right, and we're looking at maybe a rotatable dipole here. Is that some type disc cone antenna above it?
Right. It's yes, exactly, and that's for some 2 meter, some 6 meter. I actually loaded up on 6 meter as well, and then the dipole is a 10 meter. So that gives us another opportunity to make some more contacts that are not quite as heavily DX'd as the low bands, but nevertheless gives us some more contact.
Well, your antennas look first class. You guys did a great job on your antenna systems.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, that one right, the beam on the tower, that one there would look great behind anybody's house anywhere. Yeah. USA.
Yeah, this is a very old antenna. You know, Lincoln, Nebraska was the home of hiking for many, many years. I think MFJ took over high gain some years ago, but this particular beam goes back in time to the original high gain manufacturing plant that was here in Lincoln, Nebraska. So it's
do you remember? Do you go back to Citizens Band days at all?
Yeah, a little bit, but I got to tell you that I'm some dated.
Well, the only reason I ask, I was going to say to you, do you remember the high gain CLR2? That was a real popular Citizens Band antenna, 5/8 wave base station antenna.
Vertical.
Yep.
Yeah, base station vertical. Yeah, I do.
Martin Jew has brought that antenna back to life and is now selling it again. And that all started with me bringing it up to him, saying, hey, do you still have the plans for the CLR2? I asked him again the next year, and then Martin said to me, he says, Ted, we're building that antenna now. You can buy one.
Yeah. Martin.
We all have a lot to be thankful because of what Martin's done. He's really saved a lot of these companies that probably would not be around today.
But, Martin listens to everybody, and that's where he comes up with a lot of his products. And you'll be talking with Martin. He'll take a little piece of paper out of his pocket, and he'll write a little note down. And before you know it, Martin's already looking into making that a real possibility.
Yeah, I believe that. Yes, I do. Yep.
Well, I love talking to him. Actually, I love just sitting down. You know, this the MFJ catalog is all we have left, folks. I mean, all the old radio catalogs are all gone. We got our MFJ catalogs, and I love sitting down and talking to Martin about those. And say, let's go to page 2, page 3, page 4, And, of course, he can tell you anything you want to know about anything. And
that's right. And, the really nice thing is you can buy a lot of the individual parts. If you're constructing something and you need a particular capacitor, a high-voltage capacitor, say, for a linear building or something, he's got it. And it's in his catalog, and he'll sell it to you.
There you go.
And that's a real resource that that a lot of us that build can take advantage of.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of respect for a lot of these products. The antenna analyzers. My goodness. You know, if I'd have had one of those when I was a kid.
Yeah. It's almost a generic thing anymore.
Yeah, it's a good thing I didn't have one when I was a kid.
We might have had some good antennas back then. You know?
Well, listen, I thank you very, very much for
you're more than welcome.
And I hope that we have a chance to run into each other down the band a ways. The only other thing I was going to ask you though is I wasn't aware that. Lincoln, Nebraska was the home of high gain antennas. I didn't know that.
Yes, sir. Many years ago.
Okay,
I believe today is home by Telex, I believe.
Okay, who was it that was in Scott's Bluff,
DNA.
Nebraska? That's right.
DNA.
Gosh,
there was a company by the name of DNA, and you're right. That's where they were because I remember as a kid I used to have these CBers would bring me their linears, and you know they would have. I can tell you their whole lineup. They had the Hornet, they had the Raider, they had the Maverick, and they had the Phantom. And each one of them had full of sweep tubes.
And a Warrior.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I never saw a Warrior.
Obviously they ran. They were there.
And it kept getting bigger and bigger with sweep tubes, right?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
four sweep tubes, 8, 16.
Right. I mean, yeah. It was like I don't know what was in the Phantom. I think 12. But let me say this about the Phantom. The Phantom would jam television for about 5 square miles. And I mean, not just on Channel 2, you know, where you had the normal 54 megahertz. A Phantom would wipe out television on all channels for it. I'm telling you, seriously, about a square mile, you know. And also in some neighborhoods, if you had something like a 5-element beam, you know, remember the old 11-meter Long Johns, you point that in a particular direction and run that Phantom, it would cause the phones to ring in your area. The whole exchange would start ringing at one time. I remember it well. Boy, did I have fun as a kid.
But I'm going to say, it sounds like you have experience with all this.
Oh, yeah.
Not me. I know nothing of it.
Well,
never. If I did, I wouldn't admit it.
Well, listen, thanks for calling. I appreciate your report on Field Day, and hope that Field Day treats you good and you have a good rest of Field Day.
Thanks. I do appreciate it. Thanks for calling us and giving us a chance to explain what our operation is.
All righty. Thank you much.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I don't think there's anyone. No, there's no one there.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, okay. I was looking and looked at the thing. Never mind. Is this John?
Yes, it is.
All right. Very good. So I was looking at our call screener, and it was nothing there. So I thought, there's no one there.
Yeah, I got something dumped there, and I just called you back again.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you are in Pahrump.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
All right. As Art Bell says, things that go Pahrump in the night.
Yeah, sometimes they do.
All right. Now, are you at a Field Day location right now?
Yes, we are. We found a nice location next to the county offices here, and we've got some big trees to give us a little shade in this 115-degree heat.
Oh,
and
my goodness. So that's tell us a little bit about your setup. How many radios have you got on the air, and what's going on? How many people are there with you?
Okay, well, we have a number of radios, but we're only operating two transmitters today, and the station I'm sitting at, we're running 15-meter phone right now. It finally opened up for us. And the other station, I think they're up on 20 meters. I'm not sure exactly what they're doing there, but we basically have two stations, and it's going very slowly there. We've had some geomagnetic problems, and, you know, the bands haven't been the greatest. And we're just trying to survive the heat here today, and I think we're probably not going to stay overnight. We're going to tear down this evening.
Goodness. Well, that is warm. I mean, that's some temperature. You make sure you're hydrated and, you know, drinking, as they say, plenty of fluids and you know, take care not to get too much heat. It's easy to do, though. I mean, once you get out and you're having fun in that tremendous amount of heat, it's easy to forget how hot it is.
Sounds like the proper food for this location would be the ice cream today.
Ice cream?
Yeah.
Now that sounds like a good thing there. That would be just fine. Are you going to send some out to us?
I wish we could. Tell me a little bit about your ham radio group there in Pahrump.
Sure. Yeah, this is a group called the Pahrump Amateur Radio Repeater Association. We actually have two groups in town, and ours is more of the social group, and the other group that is in town is involved in emergency management, that sort of thing. But we have members that are members of both clubs, too, so we have a little bit of traffic between the clubs. And this one in particular, we probably have 30 to 35 members there in a good year. And, we have a once a month we go out and eat. You know, that's a nice little feature, and we all get a little bigger. And mm-hmm. and we have a little program. We have a meeting once a month, and have a program, and nothing real spectacular, but try to do something amateur radio related. And that's basically it. We have a repeater. That's how the club was begun. They wanted to have a 2-meter repeater years ago, so they pooled their resources and got them. In fact, somebody's talking on the 2-meter FM right now. Let me turn it down. If I push the right button here, there he's gone now. Okay. So at any rate, that's how we got started. But we've got people from all walks of amateur radio here.
You know, we went out to the National Association of Broadcasters Convention several years, and we wandered out to Pahrump. Primarily, the reason why I went out there is I wanted to see Art Bell's loop antenna that he had put up. And
that's impressive. Yeah,
what I was more concerned about is I wanted to see how he had it mounted. You know, because I didn't know if he was using like phone poles or, you know, what exactly he used to suspend it. And that's a very interesting antenna, and I've heard him talk about it, and talk about the voltage it collects. Mm. You know, which is kind of a strange arrangement. Now the repeater that you have, is this the same one that he operates on, or is there another machine?
No, there's there's a repeater for every ham in Pahrump here. I think, you know, that's the way it is. You know how that goes, and so nobody talks on any of them. He's got some kind of a link into Las Vegas, which is kind of interesting. And I haven't used it myself, but I've heard it, and it's pretty impressive. I'm not sure how he's doing it. Ours is just a regular plain old 600 up and all that kind of stuff. You know, we're just analog repeater. But there's a bit of repeater activity around town. The emergency management group has several in the area, and fortunately we haven't had any emergencies lately, so things have been pretty quiet.
There you go. Well, now you say the two groups, one is primarily for emergencies, the other one is more social. Okay.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
So what kind of, I mean, you guys go out to eat, but is there anything else you do that's part of that group in terms of socializing and having fun?
Well, we come out and swelter on field day here usually, and that's one thing we do. We talked about doing some transmitter hunts at one time, but we never got around to it. basically, we just have club meetings and talk about our gear and try to help each other out. And we're an older group, so we have every once in a while somebody will pass away here, and then we'll help out the widow and that kind of business. So that's basically what we're there for, is for everybody to keep in touch.
Well, you go. I think, did you have a question? Dr. Michael Barrett is with us here, and he's I think he's got a question for you or something like that.
Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I got to work easy here. Ted's got his hand on my shoulder, and I'm going to ask you a real specific question. I believe it's Crystal, Nevada. Is that, that's pretty close to where you are?
Yeah, I'm fairly familiar with that. I lived out there for about 4 years, yes.
Well, 30-second story. I'm a diabetic. I came through out there from Vegas to Pahrump, and there's not a lot of places to eat once you get in that section. So I had my wife stop to get me something to eat at one of the establishments, and I found out quickly that what they sold was not food. So I finally, my wife came back to the car and said, all they have is some T-shirts and souvenirs. So my brother had said any T-shirt that I would buy, he would wear. So I bought him a a T-shirt there from one of the places there in
Crystal.
Is
one of the places in Pahrump here?
Oh, yeah. It was Dennis Hoff's place, and I got him a T-shirt, yeah. And his wife at the time just about killed me and for getting it, and my wife just about killed me for sending her in there with the money to get it. So Pahrump was a great visit, but I'm gonna stay out of Crystal from now on.
Oh, okay. Well, Crystal's up north of town. There's a place called the Cherry Patch up there, Cherry Patch Ranch. And as far as I know, it's still open. I'm not sure. I used to live out next door to it, and I got to know the people fairly well. But it was an interesting thing, and it's a Nye County here is a very interesting county, and we do allow some things here that you don't find elsewhere.
It also has, I noticed there are some, unrelated to the establishments, but there in Crystal, there is some just... would call them oasis. There's grass and trees just in the middle of the desert. I guess it's where there's some...
Amazing.
What is it?
Got to be... There's some water. That's what it is.
Yeah,
the water table is up there where some of the trees can survive. And there's some areas, for instance, north of Crystal, a little ways, there's a place called Ash Meadows, which is an extremely interesting area. There's a lot of water, a lot of swamps and marshes there. And some wildlife and plants there that you don't find anywhere else in the world.
We've actually been to Ash Meadows and enjoyed the visit. Let me ask you one question, and I'm going to let Ted go back to actually conducting our field day business here. What is the current temperature, roughly, where you are right now?
Well, I don't have a thermometer here, I don't think, but we were supposed to get to 115 today, which probably would have set a record for this date.
Wow, and we think we got it rough when it's 90 here. So, Ted, you can get me out of this one now.
Well, you've seen the picture of the skeleton there where it says it's dry heat.
There you go. it's still hot. Yeah. Well, listen. Thank you so much for phoning in and talking to us. We really appreciate you giving us a field day report and an update on what you're doing out there in Pahrump. And
we appreciate it.
Tell everybody hello in 73, and hopefully we'll meet up again soon, maybe on the radio, maybe back online or something too. We just never never know. Well, thank you much. Appreciate
success it. Success with your show there. It's a great show. Thank you.
Thank you, 73.
Bye-bye.
And I want to say hello to Livonia, Michigan, and K8UNS, I believe.
That's correct.
So what's going on in Livonia today?
Well, it's not exactly the optimal field day conditions. It is around 60 degrees, steady cold rain, 40-mile-an-hour wind gusts. But we're out here. We have some tents and trailers set up, and we're operating.
Goodness gracious. Well, you know, I'll tell you, when it gets the drizzling rain and in the 60s, I mean, it's not like wintertime, but it's not exactly the most comfortable weather in the world to be doing field day. So, how are you set up, and where are you set up?
Well, we are set up basically in the heart of Livonia, just north of I-96. We are operating 4 Alpha. We have 2 sideband stations, 1 CW station, a digital station, as well as a satellite station running as a bonus. We have a variety of rigs running. Our digital station is actually operating on a Flex Radio SDR for the first time this year, so that's pretty cool with that running. We're running a few G5RVs for most of our sideband and CW, and a variety of beams and verticals for the other stuff there for the digital and DHF satellite.
Well, see, I'm originally from your area. I grew up in Dearborn Heights, and... goodness gracious, I worked at Detroit Radio for a while, so I'm real familiar. A lot of friends that lived in Livonia. I'm trying to figure out your location again. This is, you said you're near 96 and what now?
So if you're familiar with the area, I'll get a little more specific. Now, we're actually, I don't know the name of the school. Unfortunately, there used to be a school here, and it's Livonia Public Schools Field now. But we are actually between Newburgh and 275, between 5 Mile and 96, off of Levan. pretty much at LeBan and Blue Skies. Or, I'm sorry, Linden and Blue Skies. Linden and Blue Skies.
I know exactly where you're at. I spent a lot of time out there on the, as I would call it, the west side of Detroit. So tell me about your amateur club. Now, do you guys have a, you have a repeater out there somewhere in Livonia that's on echo link, do you not?
We do. I don't know the echo link note off the top of my head, but the call sign is available on echo link KUNS. You can find us there. The repeater frequency is 14535. We have a 440 repeater also. That's at 444-875, I believe, off the top of my head. We have 87 current members. Our monthly attendance is probably about 45, maybe 40% of that. So participation is pretty good. We have a lot of different projects going on as far as weather balloons and things like that. We've got guys getting into different nets and clubs. There's always a new project. Every month someone stands up with a new idea, a new project. Some stuff is old school, some stuff is new school, and I've got a lot going on. Our monthly, we call Lark in the Park, which is a Saturday event. Everybody gets out, goes out to the park, and operates or does a project like building antennas or something similar to that.
Well, tell me a little bit about the weather balloons. What do you guys do with weather balloons?
Well, we actually, it's a high-altitude balloon. basically, it's not necessarily for weather, but there's a few other clubs that have done them. We did our first one last year, which was headed up by Ryan K. RDM. He is our vice president, and he basically designed and put the whole thing together. All the membership participated as far as different people helping to build the payload and all the different components that went in that. The original plan was to send up an SSTV transmitter. We had a beacon, obviously. A couple other things were supposed to go up, but we had some weight issues, some heat issues, a couple cameras. Unfortunately, the launch did not go as planned on the first go-around, so we got up late and had to remove some of the equipment from the payload. But we did get the APRS section of the payload up, which went up, and the beacon. And we got some pretty good QSLs from that. Pretty far out, we launched in mid-Michigan, Ionia area, and we got QSLs back from New York, far out, Wisconsin, things like that. We got right around 92,000 feet was the achieved final height before the balloon burst and the payload came back down, which was successfully recovered.
Successfully recovered. Wow. Let me ask this question. How, obviously, you have to, you're using helium, but how much helium does it take to launch one of those weather balloons? And approximately, what do you think the cost is to send one up?
Well, if you do not lose the first balloon before you attach the payload, it costs around $230. Unfortunately for us, the helium was double that. We had to get another tank, and I don't remember the pound tank, but it was basically the largest you can get. I don't remember exactly how many pounds it was for that.
And it takes the full tank?
It took probably two-thirds of the tank. For our payload, we probably could have went a little more. Our altitude didn't go up as fast as we had planned with the amount of helium that we used. So we should have used a little bit more, probably not quite twice as much as we did, but a little more, so it would have went up a little faster. So it went up about half the speed that we expected. But I think that actually ended up working out because we got such a good height out of it. The record for one of those high-altitude balloons is right around, I believe, 100,000 feet, maybe 110,000. So for us to get to 92 on a first attempt, it was pretty good. We had planned another one for this year, but unfortunately parts availability has postponed that, and that's probably not going to get launched this year. It'll probably be put together over the wintertime and launched next summer.
I was just wondering what kind of electronics and payload you had on that thing. You got some questions, Tom. W5KUB is sitting here, but you've got a look on your face
a
question.
You were just talking about the helium. I mean, and I've studied this a little bit, and I've got a friend that sends up helium balloons near space, and it takes a lot of helium to lift very little ounces. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, we've looked into it to try to do a balloon just to carry a camera or something, and it takes a lot of helium. But, you know, now with the little Arduino projects and those kind of things where you can build in a GPS and cameras and all those kind of things, beacons, a lot of people are starting to do this now, and it's getting to be very interesting. We had, on one of our Tuesday night shows, one of our first shows, we had a night just about launching near-space balloons, and it was pretty interesting, and we may have that guy back on someday to talk, but I've always wanted to do it, but I didn't want to lose my camera. And, you know, 93,000 feet, that camera's not going to come right back down right there where you launched that thing. I would imagine you guys had to travel at least maybe 70, 80 miles to get it, didn't you?
I think that's what it was. It came back down. I know that the entire day, obviously the APRS on the balloon actually tracked its travel distance. And you can actually look that up if you go to KUNS.org. There is some information on that, and we have a map and the results and everything of where that actually traveled and its distance. Obviously, that had changed as it looped around in the jet stream and everything, but overall, I think we retrieved the payload about 50 miles from where we launched it at, and it traveled somewhere around 115 total. I'm pulling these numbers off the top of my head from what I remember. I think that's what it was, but it was around 8-hour flight. 4-hour flight, maybe? Yeah, 4-hour flight. Around 4 hours is actually in the air. And it didn't come back down, you know, right where we set it up at, but we actually had guys who had tracked it to the point that they saw it hit the ground. They saw the parachute, they saw the payload come down and land right in the corner of an intersection just off the road, right in some tall grass, so it had a nice soft landing, and everything came back in one piece. So we were really happy about that.
Well, that's great being able to track it, my friend I was talking about, they were in a car just chasing that thing, I think, for 75 or 80 miles, and they were right on it. And, you know, the interesting thing about it, it doesn't go up and go out a certain distance. It may go out 50 miles, and it may turn around. It may come back 40 miles. You know, it just depending, I guess, on which way the wind's blowing up there.
That's exactly what happened with ours. We had a few chase teams, and we had some people with Doppler, some people following the APRS, and that's exactly what happened. It got to a certain height, and it took off 75 miles an hour out towards the east, and so a couple of guys went that way, and before you knew it, it turned around. It spiraled up for another 5,000 or 8,000 feet. And then all of a sudden it just came back the other way and shot back to the west. And that's how we actually ended up getting so much distance of travel. But then it really came down not too far, you know, in relation compared to all the travel from where we launched it at.
Well, a lot of fun. Next time you guys do one, contact me, W5KUB. We might want to feature you guys on one of our shows. What do you think, Ted?
Tom will figure out how to get a television camera mounted on that thing somehow.
Yeah. we'll do it.
That was our intention. That was the first thing, unfortunately, that we scrapped from the payload to save weight, because, you know, the FAA has some restrictions on these high-altitude balloons, what you can actually send up. And with our first try, there was a lot more weight than it needed to be. The payload was right around 7 pounds, and this new one that we've got designed so far, the preliminary weight is closer to, like, 2.5. So we're looking at less helium, more electronics, and less weight. So, you know, it looks like it's going to be a lot better. And hopefully we'll have, you know, an ATV transmitter on this one like we planned for the last one.
Ted, just a quick story. Back when I was 18 years old, this is like a half a century ago, at engineering school, we were going to launch. I had a ham friend in the local ham club. He worked for the FAA. And he was going to track this balloon for us. And we went in the chemistry lab, and we had taped together about 6 or 8 clothes bags, these plastic clothes bags, to make this big, long, cigar-looking thing. And guess what? We were filling it with natural gas from the Bunsen burners. Of course, it doesn't have a lot of lift, but it does have lift. And the next thing I know, we're called into the dean of the college. He says, boys, I just got a call from the FAA, and I hear you're going to launch a balloon, and that's not a good idea. So that was the end of our balloon launching.
There you go. Well, listen, I want to thank you so very much for for participating in Field Day Live, and hope you have a good rest of Field Day. And hopefully we'll have a chance to meet up on the air sometime, or, you know, maybe you'd want to do a radio show with us on QSO and talk about the balloons, the balloon launching and all the different things that you guys do at some point.
Absolutely. I think we'd love to do that. We have a very active club, and we've always got new projects, and I'd love to share them with the rest of the amateur community.
All righty. Well, listen, 73s, and tell everybody in your group that we're saying 73s to them, and that... we certainly hope they have a great Field Day.
Absolutely. 73s, thanks for having me on.
All righty. We got Tim on the line here, and I see you are in what? You're in Illinois?
Yeah, in Illinois, in Jacksonville, West Central Illinois.
Jacksonville, West Central Illinois. And yep. Tell us a little bit about your Field Day operation.
It's a kind of a low-key operation we ran the last several years.
We're in a town of 5,000, and we're the biggest thing for 80 miles. So it's a little bit sparse out here, population-wise, and we've only got three guys at our field day this year, and we thought about running 1A, but we went ahead and decided it's too much fun to run two transmitters at the same time. So we're going to be a little thin on operators, especially at the middle of the night, although I'm a graveyard shift guy. I'll probably go to sleep about 10 and maybe wake up 1:30 or 2. I love running the low bands in the early morning. But so far, conditions seem to be pretty good. We've got a compromised antenna on 10 meters. It's not working, and I don't suppose it's opened up anyway. But 15 is reasonable, at least.
I just saw in the chat room there, everybody's talking about 10 meters. It seems pretty dead right now, and they were mentioning there's another solar storm or something today, so... That might be some of the problems.
Right. Well, our problem is antenna, first off. So I guess I'm sort of selfishly hoping 10 doesn't open up, because then we won't miss anything. But that wouldn't be very nice, literally. If it opens up, that's fine.
Well, you know, we've had this discussion before, and that is sometimes I think bands are open, but people are not on them, or they aren't transmitting on them. You know, so
I'm sure that's true. I doubt that's true on field day, but you never know. Like on 6, we've been monitoring 6, and last year I sat down and hadn't heard anything for a long time, finally called CQ, and I worked two quick ones, so you never know.
Well, the other night I came in the shack here, and I don't get on. I don't have a chance to. And I got on 40 meters, and I went up and down the band. I didn't hear anybody. I mean, there might have been a QSO. I mean, it's like weird. This is 40, and I'm not hearing anyone. So I went on and I called CQ for a pretty good period of time, and finally I was ready to say, oh, heck with it, you know, and all of a sudden...
Your antenna was unhooked.
No, here comes this guy from Mexico City, Mexico, you know, calling me on 40, but the problem I had is I couldn't understand the guy. His accent was so heavy and so thick, I couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. And there's other guys that listen... They understand people perfectly, and I'm listening, and I'm thinking, what did he say, you know? So I guess that's why people go, you're 599, Nashville, 73s.
I didn't hear all that. Your signal port is 59 plus 20.
Yeah, right. I had a QSO with a Chilean guy down in Antarctica. I was speaking to him in my 3-year-old Spanish, and he was speaking to me in his 4-year-old English, and we had a nice 4-minute QSO over the course of an hour, but we had fun.
Well, I let me ask you a question now. Is your field day group right now part of a local club?
It's sort of all of a local club, the Trojan Amateur Radio Club. Being with the sort of population that we have here, we don't have a very big club. I don't know if we got 8 or 10 dues-paying members, something like that. But typically there'd be 5 of us at field day, but we have one guy out with recent knee surgery and another one with 5 harmonics. I don't mean on the radio kind of harmonics. I mean kids, and they're busy this weekend, so we're just down to the 3 of us.
Well, that happens sometimes, you know, with field day, there's family things, plans,
sure,
and dates and things that are
normally we try to protect it. We're also out in the wheat area, and it's always about wheat harvest time, which it is now, but I retired from farming a year and a half ago, so that's no longer a concern of mine. But I usually left the wheat field to come and play field day. Occasionally I just could not for the whole time, but usually I could put in at least 4 or 6 hours somewhere. So I've been doing field day since 1968, and I suppose I've missed 3 or 4 over that time period.
Well, you're doing good. You know, because I'm sure there's folks that...
I don't know if I'm doing good, but I'm having fun.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, having fun
we are out of time.
The most important thing.
And you've been listening to Field Day Live 2015, at least a portion of it. And we'll have the rest of the hours up and around as soon as we can. But we want to say thank you for listening, and thank you to our special guest on Field Day Live, Tom Medlin, W5KUB, and another special guest, Dr. Michael Barrett, N4ECW. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for QSO 73's.